Hello, it's Holly Osborne. Hi, Susie. This is Holly Hutchinson.
Hi, Holly. Thank you for being so wonderfully patient with my emails and giving me all of the answers to my many questions.
Oh, you're welcome. Anytime. We're just going to wait for some of the other participants to join, and Bill Treadwell will be joining us shortly.
Okay.
How are things back in D.C.?
I'm actually in Maryland right now, and it's starting to look like autumn here, so it's lovely.
Oh, we're in Colorado. We're seeing the first glimpses of that today, snow on top of the peaks and colors in the trees. It's so beautiful.
Y'all stop rubbing it in, us Louisianans down here.
Hi, Dan. This is Holly Hutchinson. The rest of the group is joining in, and Bill Treadwell will be on the phone soon. But welcome to the call.
Okay, thank you. There's no live meeting with this, correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
What will happen is a majority of the what happens on this call today is not going to be presentation, but it will be an open dialogue about the information that's in the Human Capital Accelerator, that big binder. If you haven't received your binder in the mail yet, it's a beefy little document, and what we want is real active verbal participation. So,
Okay. Yeah, no, I got. I was supposed to be in a class that was supposed to start a couple weeks ago, but I think it got canceled. So the materials I've had for a little while.
Yes, I remember that. In fact, we postponed this. Actually, two or three other participants that are going to be joining in next week, and so that's why we had to delay so that people could get material, and we didn't want them to miss two classes. So thank you for being patient with us.
Oh, no problem. No problem.
Let me see if I can grab another one. Call out to Bill, see where he is. Bill lives just outside of Boulder, and he'll probably fill you in, but he has about 60, there's several horses that he boards, and because of the big floods they've been having too. All sorts of crazy things.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Wild. While I'm just connecting with Bill, if you want to mute your line at any point during this call. Hey, Bill, welcome. This is Holly, and I think most of the other participants have joined in on the call. I was just about to give them instructions on how they can mute and unmute their lines. So let me finish doing that, and then you can take it from here. So if you want to mute your lines, press star 6. And if you go ahead and do that now on a touch-tone phone. So everyone should be able to hear my voice still, and yet I can't hear any of your background noise. And also the message, the system should be giving you a cue whether or not you're muted or unmuted. So that's a good way to just find out. To unmute your line, you can go ahead and press star. All right, Bill, why don't you take it from here? And, Bill, you're muted if you haven't hit star 6 again.
Yeah, this is Bill Treadwell. Welcome, everybody, to the class. I'm excited. I think we're going to have some fun, and we're going to have we're going to definitely learn a lot of new things. And so, welcome to everybody. What I'd like to do is just review a couple of the requirements for certification real quick, and then I'm going to ask each one of you on the line to check in and give us some background on your experience and your coaching activities and what you'd like to get out of the class. Okay, thank you, Holly, for giving us some information. I just want to point out again that participation is extremely important. We're all here to learn from each other. We want to attend all the classes. If there is an absence, it can't be more than for two classes during the 12 weeks. Assuming everybody has the Human Capital Accelerator, we will be referring to that a lot during the class, so I'd suggest you have that available online or printed out. Probably online is the most easy. We have weekly assignments in the syllabus. I'm sure you all have got the syllabus from the pre-course material. And then with the practice sessions, you may have noticed there's a form where you can document your practice sessions, a minimum of 20 sessions. The ones you'll do in class will count, as well as ones you can do outside the class. And then as far as the roles are concerned, everyone will at least take the role of a coach at least twice, and also the role of a client at least twice during the class time. We also, I like to have a third person when we can also act as an observer so we can get feedback on our coaching sessions. And then at the end, there's a final exam that's online that you can email back to myself or back to the support group at CTA. Any questions on the basic requirements for anybody? Okay. All right. Well, then tell me who's on the line and who would like to start by talking about their background and a little bit about themselves, both professionally and personally, and what you'd kind of like to get out of the class. Just if you identify who you are and where you're from, we can start with that.
Hi, Bill. This is Dan Shea. I can speak on this. That's okay?
Yeah.
Okay, well, good afternoon, everybody, or good morning, depending where you're at. My name, again, is Dan Shea. I am a Senior Director of Human Resources with an organization called Skanska. Skanska is a Swedish-based construction management and real estate development firm. And I am, I've been with the organization for close to 14 years now, as it's made its presence in the United States, larger and larger. The organization is one of the largest construction companies globally. In the States, we build projects such as football stadiums, which we've done one just recently in New Jersey for the Jets and Giants. We subway tunnelers. We are bridge builders. So large-scale projects. It's been an interesting ride with this organization. My role in the company as a senior director is I am the HR business partner for the development group. I've been doing that for about a year and a half now. Real estate development is relatively new in the United States for Skanska. So I'm with an organization that is small in size, about 50 employees spread throughout the U.S., and they have had recent success. So the point in time for this company is not about being a startup anymore. It's about, transitioning into what we would call a business unit for Skanska. And, my work is going to be heavy organizational development, working with senior management on their leadership development, and then implementing a solid HR program for them. And prior roles, I've worked heavy with the construction groups, and I've run the Northeast Territory for Scanscare from an HR perspective, upwards of 2,000 employees I've had responsibility for. I'm a father of two. I have a 12-year-old son in the seventh grade. I have a 6-year-old daughter in first grade, and I'm learning that the daughter is much more challenging than the son has ever been, so working through that. My wife is a full-time professional as well. She's a vice president of real estate and operations for Weight Watchers. So we have a crazy schedule of travel and balancing personal and business and, you know, care for children. So every day is, you know, is a bit chaotic. I am I'm based out of New York. I live on Long Island. And I've worked in the city for the most part with Skanska. I have an office in the Empire State Building, which actually is fairly interesting. And we're up on the 32nd floor, so we have some nice views. If we ever need an opportunity to meet together, I can suggest we do it there. And then as far as getting out of this course, I'm hoping to further develop. Skanska Human Resources is transitioning from a HR function that is heavy transaction and a little bit of the more traditional HR role, and there's a tremendous amount of employee relationship, leadership development, organizational development work that needs to go on, and we're trying as an organization to ensure that HR is focused on work that adds the most value to the organization, and processing time cards and salary increases and things of that nature are still a requirement of our function, but there's a lot more work in these other areas that's of interest to the organization and tremendous interest to me. I spend a lot of time with senior management, and being able to have a coaching certification as an additional tool to use is just going to not only help me in my career and my place in the organization, but overall make me feel like I'm adding more value. So I think that's it. I'll shut up now.
Well, that's a great start, Dan. I appreciate the information. We certainly want to focus on and how we can develop more value for you to take back to the organization and move forward with it. Who would like to go next? Okay. I know that there's more than Dan on the call. Let's see. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Jennifer Powers.
Hey, Jennifer. How are you?
Hi, everyone. Good. Thank you. Happy to be here. I am out of Portland, Oregon. I am a coach and a speaker, as well as an author. I have a real neat book called O Shift, and it's companion O Shift for teens. And I work with professionals and entrepreneurs to help them build confidence and competence in their business or in their job. And I work with, when I work with professionals that don't have their own business, I'm working inside of a company. Similar to Intel would be probably my most popular client because they're out here in Portland. And mostly with executives in that aspect, some smaller companies, heads of companies or directors. And I find that can be a little bit of a different ball of wax than working with the entrepreneur, right? So there's a lot of, as everyone knows, different dynamics that go on within an organization that might not be present in a small business or an entrepreneurial role. So I'm looking forward to learning more about how to understand and maneuver using the coaching skills within an organization, because it can sort of be an anomaly to me at times. I've been through corporate America, but I've been out long enough that I feel a little bit disconnected, so this will be helpful. And also, I'm a mentor coach at Coach Training Alliance, so I work with a lot of coaches who are corporate coaches. Like, more and more, our clientele or our student population is made up of people who are training in company. And so I want to be able to speak to their needs as well, and I think this is going to be a real good process for me to understand so I can be a better teacher of that too. So, on a personal level, like I said, I'm out in Portland, and I've been in business about 8 years, and I have a wonderful husband and two beautiful stepboys, 8 and 10. And if you've ever been out to Portland, you know how wonderful it is. And if you ever get out here, do look me up, because I'd love to show you around.
Okay, well, that's great country. I'm from Seattle originally, Jennifer.
Yeah.
University of Washington graduate many years
right
back.
Well, I'm a Jersey girl, originally, but and Dan, I don't hear that Long Island accent. What's up with that? I was hoping to get a little more accent out of you.
I'm sure as the course comes on, my Northeastern accent will certainly come out. And remember, I'm in construction as well, so I'll try to refrain from using some of the language that they use on the job site.
No, please don't. I'm starving for that out here. thanks, Phil. Thanks, Dan.
Yeah. Okay, who's next? And I apologize for not picking up on who was on the call to start with, but please let me know who you are and who else is there. How about Susie? Are you there, Susie?
Hi, this is Susie.
Hi, Susie. Tell us about yourself.
I will, but I have to tell you, I'm in the car, and no, I'm not driving, but I have new software on my cell, and I keep losing the screen with the button, so this was not my desire to have this first conference call from the car, but I just didn't have any other choice. Oh, good. Well, I was really concerned because before I figured out how to mute out, we were beside a car, which was roaring loud, and then sure everybody was hearing, although the muffler's down. Professionally, I have two different roles. One is that I'm a senior professional instructor for the Carey Business School at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore, and I teach organization development. Been doing that for quite a while. And my other is that I have my own consulting practice as an OD professional. And I've been doing coaching on and off for a long time. I just have never been certified, and I finally said, I just want to do the certification route now and be with other cool coaches as they're going through this process. So that's what I do professionally. My clients of choice, by the way, are primarily organizations that are nonprofits, and for the most part, those that work with young children. And so most of my coaching clients are the executive director level with children's programs. I do a lot of work, for example, with Head Start directors. So kind of the non-corporate shift here. And personally, I'm right now traveling to the beautiful Western Maryland Mountains, which is where I'm originally from, going back to our home in Columbia because I had client work this morning in Western Maryland. And I understand that Colorado, our fall is just starting to show up, but we don't have snow on the mountaintops yet. I live in Columbia, Maryland with my husband and two cats who keep me great company in the office. And I'm trying to think what else. I've been doing this for all of this work for a very long time. So this is part of what I'm transitioning into. I do a semi-retirement and just focus on coaching and a small amount of consulting versus teaching and all of the other work I've been doing.
Hey, just a quick question. I know you'd like to get certification. As far as you're teaching OD at Johns Hopkins, and you also have your own practice. In your practice, are you coaching anybody inside of any organizations, or are they pretty much personal coaching situations?
No, they're within organizations. Yeah.
Okay. Good.
I have done some outside, some one-on-one. But right now, all my coaching work is inside.
Okay. And are they basically corporations, or do you have some government agencies?
Right now I'm not doing any work with government agencies, but have in the past. And so right now, yes, I'm working with corporations. And again, much smaller and primarily nonprofit. But
okay.
All 501c3, so all incorporated.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
Are you telling me I don't need this for certification? Sorry.
No, let's go this way. We're going to really enjoy your experience as well as Jennifer's, and so we're all profit from each other's backgrounds. Appreciate it. Well, we can hear you very well. Now, was there anyone else on the call today?
Yes, Lynn Jones.
Lynn.
Can you hear me?
I sure can, Lynn.
Okay, great. My name's Lynn Jones. I'm from Lake Charles, Louisiana. And first let me say y'all are really rubbing it in on the fall weather that you're experiencing. It's still in the 90s here in Louisiana and muggy. I would probably be better off if this call was taking place in January or February, then maybe the tide would be turned a little bit. But anyhow, I was picturing what a real fall was like, so thank you very much. I am an elected official. I'm a county clerk of court. Actually, we call them parishes here. I've been in office for 9 years. This is my third term. A lot of people don't know what clerk of courts do, but we really take care of everything that goes through the court system. And in Louisiana, we're also responsible for all the land records. Y'all would call it recorder of mortgages. And also I'm the head election official for the parish. So we kind of have three roles here. My office has about 130 employees, and most of my background has been through the government side. My father was a state legislator. My sister is a county commissioner for 16 years. My prior jobs, I was chief of staff for the lieutenant governor for the state of Louisiana, and also I was the district director for a United States congressman. I thank the Lord that I'm not dealing with the Congress anymore. That's one reason why I ran for office myself. I've been out, as I said, for 9 years, and that's been very refreshing not to be in that mess. I very active in our community, involved with the Red Cross, Big Brothers, Big Sisters, American Heart Association. I like to give back to the community. One of the ways I do that is I DJ for a charity event. It saves them hundreds to thousands of dollars not paying a DJ. I do a lot of the sound for different heart walks, cancer walks, those type of things. I'm married. My wife is a newly retired band director. She retired Monday of this week. I'm very jealous, but that means I have to work a little bit longer. I have four children. I have three sons, all in their 20s, one in graduate school getting his PhD, one getting his law degree, and the other son is getting his degree in life. He's got a baby and a baby on the way. And then I have a 14-year-old daughter. So I stay pretty busy with that as well. And the reason why I got involved with this is actually I have been looking at possibly looking into the coaching industry after I retire. And so I've that's been kind of on a bucket list, and then I saw this program that could really help me with my employees, and I thought that this would be a great opportunity to kill two birds with one stone. And so that's really where I am. I have no experience in coaching, but I do have a lot of experience with employees. Like I said, we have right at 130 employees. My previous job with the lieutenant governor, we had about 900 that I was responsible for. So, and I know it's I'm basically a CEO of the country, my company, but I also do HR and take out the trash and everything else almost. And so 90% of my day is spent dealing with issues with my employees. And so I thought that this would be an opportunity for me to learn and grow and to maybe help them learn and grow. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Lynn. That's super. Yeah, and you're absolutely right. You'll be able to use what we worked through on the course right away with your people today. I think we've covered, is anyone else on the call? I think we're pretty much there. We will have other people joining us next week. Holly may have mentioned that to you. There's some that have signed up that just couldn't make that first session. So what I'd like to do now is to give you a little idea of my background beyond what it said in the in the bio on our class page. And some of the things I'd like, and what my style is, and how I'd like to kind of work with the class. I think, based on the page, you realize that my background is not in organizational development per se, but it's in executive leadership of large and small organizations. About 38 years in the high-tech industry. I worked for large companies, including Sun Microsystems and IBM and others. At the senior executive level, I was a VP general manager the last 20 years of my career with one of the Sun subsidiaries. So I've had a lot of business experience. I became a certified coach with CTA in 2005 when I left corporate America for the first time, and I've worked as a business coach since then for the last 8 years, working with large and small companies. Also, I did have a chance to run two or three small companies as a CEO at different stages of my career. So I'm a business person, and I think I may be the person that in many cases in your organizations that you would be coaching and helping that manager become a better leader and a better decision maker. Beyond that, the other thing I'm doing is, some of you may not have heard of an organization called Vistage International, but Vistage is the world's leading CEO organization. We've got about 17,000 CEOs around the world as Vistage members of peer advisory groups of 8 to 16 people. And I have a Vistage group, and I'm known as a Vistage chair. There's about 300 Vistage chairs in the United States. So I work with CEOs both from the standpoint of a peer advisory group between 8 and 16 people that meet monthly, but I also do one-to-one coaching with each member of the group for a couple hours a month. So if you have a chance to at some point look up Vistage International, that's V-I-S-T-A-G-E. It's an interesting organization of CEOs. From a personal standpoint, I've been married only 51 years, and I understand that's a rather small group of people that have been married 50 years or more. I have three grown children.
one lives in Colorado, which is I live in Boulder, Colorado, and yes, Dave, my feet are dry. We'll talk about that in a second. I have 8 grandchildren. I also have been involved with nonprofits. I'm been on the board of a local homeless shelter and a local rescue group here in Boulder. I've also, I'm on the advisory board for the Better Business Bureau and stuff like that. And also my wife and I own a horse boarding and training facility in Boulder, when we board about 60 horses for people. So anybody's a horse person, we can talk about that. So that's kind of something about myself. As far as what I'm looking for, my style is basically to enjoy what we do and enjoy learning. I'm a lifelong learner, and I love the idea of learning. I love the idea of teaching. I'd like to be sure that that everybody gets a lot out of their class and is very interactive. I encourage lots of interaction. I hope it's all voluntary. If it's not, then I'll select people and ask them what their thoughts are on different things. I also would like to talk about a couple of the areas I kind of call behavioral agreement, or kind of ground rules for all of us. And these are just things, don't write them down, they're just because it's just common sense. It's things like stay present, stay in the game during the calls, listen newly. In other words, be intentionally slow to understand, because beneath the words there's a lot of white spaces in which we need to kind of understand and internalize concepts and each other's ideas. And so we want to explore our truths, your truths, my truths, each other's truths, and really have a genuine interest in each other's success. Don't be afraid to confront and deal with real issues. And each one of us is kind of responsible for creating value. This is a confidential environment. Feel safe here in what you have to say with us, whether it's professional or personal. We have what we call the Las Vegas rule. What's said in the call stays in the call. And most importantly, have fun. Enjoy yourself, enjoy each other, and just think about what takeaways you have and what you can do. So I think we've kind of gone around the thing. Anybody have a question at this point before we start talking about the material? Okay. And I've lived in Boulder for about 30 years. Grew up in the Seattle, lived in Hawaii for 7 years, lived in Southern California for a number of years, lived in Virginia for a couple of years. So as you all have been reading and hearing in the news, Boulder had a tough couple of weeks, we're working our way out of it. Okay, so if all of you have access to the accelerator, I like to kind of refer to the accelerator and then kind of ask some questions around the material. And if you look at the syllabus for today, we're going to talk about some of the things in the reading, what's human capital coaching mean? How does it, in what context? We're going to talk about some of the things in the readings, and then we'll review the simple coaching model. What we'll do, I'll start assigning in the next weeks people to be the coach or the client and the observer, as we work through the coaching sessions. And so they'll take up, we'll probably do at least a couple of those each time we get together. Today, we'll kind of discuss all that as opposed to actually doing it, depending upon how much time we have. So I'd like to just start out by, do all of you have the accelerators sort of handy? I'm not sure that,
yes.
Yeah, okay, great.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not sure if you're driving with you. I probably don't have it handy, but I'd kind of like to talk, like just kind of like to, if ask people what they think or how would they define human capital coaching. Anybody want to take a crack at that one?
Based on our own thoughts, Bill, or on what we find in the accelerator?
Both. If you feel like you want to add something to that, I mean, the accelerator obviously will be helpful, but if you want to refer to the accelerator, you can refer to page 7.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, expand on that if you'd like.
Well, I think when I think of, this is Jen, when I think of human capital, I think of the untapped assets that a lot of leaders and organizations are missing out in and on, and that is the actual people that are working there, both in the front lines and at the top of the heap. And so human capital sounds like it's tapping into that through coaching and using coaching as a tool to tap into those assets or that capital.
Okay. Okay. All right. I'll comment after I hear from some others as well. Who else would like to give their thought on what they think when they think of the term human capital coaching?
This is Dan. For me, in my world, and again, with my organization, and I'm coming from this from a different perspective than some of the folks on the phone who've been coaching for a little while. You know, my role in the organization is to be in charge of human capital to the extent of working with leaders to also be in charge of human capital, if that makes sense. For construction companies, there's a lot of tools that are available that we need to manage and maintain and keep track of. But at the end of the day, what we're really putting out there for clients is the people that we employ. So it's skill sets, it's development of those people, and that's just one aspect of it. It's also, again, for me, is being there as a resource, an advisor, a guiding light, in a sense, to help employees navigate through their career and help managers help to navigate just at the management of their resources.
Good.
This is Susie. I think what I like about the term is that it helps to distinguish this type of coaching from life coaching, and it also, though, makes it broader than just doing executive coaching for me because all people in the organization are the human capital. So it both narrows it and broadens it for me.
Mm-hmm. This is Lynn. I agree with Susie in the fact that the term human capital, you know, what I find is you've got really two sides of the coin here. One is the work side and the productivity and those aspects of the business, but also you have the human side that not only does their outside lives affect what they do in their daily work lives, and sometimes they need to be helped in that aspect where it rolls over and it sometimes negatively affects their work side. And sometimes they need a shoulder to cry on or someone just to talk to. And I'm hoping and I have a lot of ladies that work here. I have about 125 out of my 130. And being really the only man in management, it is it is sometimes challenging because, you know, I come from a different cloth here, and I'm hoping this will give me some insight.
You're good. Well, all good comments. I think that, you know, Bill Gates has made a comment that, you know, the value of his company walks out the door every night. And I think that, you know, what I've seen evolve, certainly in my experience over the years, and I'd love to hear other people's comments on that, because sometimes telling those stories helps a lot. Many of the years I was in corporate America, there was not any focus on coaching at all. In fact, it would have been considered a soft skill at best. And there was so much focus on numbers, and more coldly, the relationships were colder. They tended to be more transactional, and I think that they didn't take into consideration, you know, the hearts of people. They may have taken into consideration the minds, but not the hearts of the people in the organization that really create value for the organization. And you know, one of the bigger benefits of human capital coaching is to help with retention, to help companies retain people, to help people have a much better work experience, better environment, to start tapping into the hearts of people to develop the internal motivation to accomplish things more based on where they'd like to go and go forward, as opposed to being motivated by fear or concern of losing their positions. So I think that those are some positives. I also think that, you know, it differentiates itself because it's really about coaching within an organization as opposed to, you know, coaching individuals outside of that area. Organizations being, of course, both profit, non-profit, could be government. The last course I went through in human capital coaching, there was a lady working for one of the government agencies, and of course, there, you know, with a federal agency, again, all organizations are beginning to see now coaching is becoming a hard skill. It's something that's crucial to help them achieve their goals, meet their objectives, and I think as we develop our effectiveness going forward, we'll find that there are very big differences between coaching in an organization as opposed to coaching, you know, on an outside client basis. So I'd like to talk about what we talk about in this course is about the. And we talk, it's part of today's stuff is, you know, about the four major sections of our training. So the first one I'd like to talk about and ask about getting some of your thoughts back on, and we'll get into more depth in the weeks to come on these areas, but coaching from the center. And I guess I'd like to kind of get a feeling again from all of you as to what your thoughts, vision are regarding coaching from the center. Take it in any order you'd like. I'd like to hear from everybody.
This is Susie, and I will confess I have not had a chance to read the accelerator. But for me, coaching from the center sort of goes along with the whole notion of leadership from the heart, and that you've got to have that self-knowledge, understand yourself, and yourself be centered and in order to be able to help others.
Good.
Yeah, and this is Jen. I would piggyback that and say that you must bring yourself to the coaching process. And, I mean, because that is one of your greatest assets, right? So to keep that out would be silly. And so that authenticity is an important part. and then being able to be really present and blank and to come with yourself but not about yourself. And I think that's something that's difficult to do for a lot of people when they start coaching, but that groundedness can be practiced and honed, and it's very important.
Makes sense.
Well, this is Lynn. I think the term center would be yourself, and bringing out what, especially let's say that you're a leader in the company, you know, you set the tone, you set really the atmosphere. And in my personal experience, I mean, I have a personal relationship with all my employees, and so it's more than just a working relationship. When I say personal relationship, I take interest in their daily lives and what's going on with their family and those type of things. So the center, I think it would be, you know, coming from you.
Okay.
Dan, just I was going to add, and I'm relatively new to this, but sitting on the other side of the table, I guess, from a coach, and as somebody who has gone through the process of being coached, for me, if I'm sensing there's somebody is not, you know, I guess what you call centered or authentic or just a real person, and you can tell that what they're talking to you about and walking you through is there's a deeper level. It's nothing superficial. It's not just somebody opened up a book and is reading verbatim from a page. I kind of view that as what they're talking about with coaching from the center and you know, all the words, authentic, being grounded, even looking at the page where it says what it takes to be a successful coach and taking your experience, your maturity, your quiet life skills. I think that all adds into it. But if you're sitting on the other side of the table, you can tell when somebody is coming from a real place or they're just coming from the pages of a book. And I think you have to know and be centered and know who you are and what your beliefs are in order to be effective for somebody else.
Yep, I think you guys are right on as far as where it's coming from and how that is. Any other comments from anybody else on that? I think we've covered it. I think there are some good things. I just want to point out one thing in the accelerator, if you have it around. Page 16, there are, I think, I like to kind of pull out things that resonate with me. And they talked about, kind of a contrast. Rather than doing or performing as a coach, you're being present with your client, you're connecting. And I think that's, people can tell when you're connecting or not connecting. In fact, they can tell not only, when they're with you, but probably even by phone. I think also the coach from the center is we're trying to draw solutions from the client, and the answers are within the client rather than to try to solve the client's problems. The tendency on a lot of people's parts, and I certainly have had this tendency, and we'll talk about people's weaknesses, and I'll start with mine. As a corporate executive, I think during many years I probably wore what we call the mask, where you were a VP and therefore you had your mask or your bubble or whatever you want to call it that you kind of stayed in. And so the authenticity was not there. Anybody else find that they've been those experiences?
Hey, Bill, this is Jen. I love that you just used that term, the mask. I use that all the time with myself and with clients, and boy, what a heavy thing to carry around. And to take it off is really a gift to yourself because it's a lot easier, but also to people around you because that's really what they want to see. They want to see you. And like someone was saying, they get when you're not bringing your whole self, they feel it energetically for sure.
Well, yeah, and I think that the, you know, in corporations, there's been a tendency, you know, first of all, people are afraid of their, you know, of losing their job.
Yeah.
They're afraid to show weakness. They always feel like they have to have the answers. They're asked, in other words, to say, I don't know, which is an authentic and real thing to say, people consider that scary to be able to say that. And I certainly have sat in conference rooms with a bunch of executives and been asked, well, what do you think, Bill, or what do you think, Jack, or whatever? And if you said, I don't know, you'd probably get, you know, you'd take a big risk. And so, you know, and particularly when you're younger, and I'm not, there's this ambition to go to the next level, and therefore you think you have to know it all. You have to, you know, if I'm going to get promoted, then I have to show, you know, intelligence or, you know, highly developed skill sets. And I guess you can still do that, but you don't have to do it in such a way that that you're not authentic. And that's where people, you really have to work together. The next thing I think that along this line of coming from a being place or coaching from the center is listening. Guilty as charged. How about anybody else? Got a problem there?
Big time.
Big time. I love it. now we're getting up. Now we're getting together. Good. Good. How about anybody else?
My wife will concur.
Yes. Or, you know, my wife has said to me, you need to have your hearing checked. It's so funny. When I did it, it was fine. And so I said, my hearing's great. She said, oh, okay. So I think we're talking about selective listening here.
Or husbanditis.
That is very hard thing to come stay present and listen, because we have a tendency to wander. Everybody does. I mean, if you ever tried, anyone ever tried meditation, you know how the mind wanders when you're trying to focus on, you know, whether it's your breathing or a mantra or whatever that might be for you. Anybody tried meditation?
I'm still trying. And
yeah.
You know, you were...
It's a practice.
Well, I learned, you know, I went to a thing 30 years ago on meditation, and I've fallen off the wagon many times, and I keep trying to go back to it, and I finally have worked into what I call breath meditation, where it's called walking breath meditation, because I take my dogs for a walk every day, so I'm using that time for what we call a breathing, you know, walking, breathing meditation. So that's kind of what I'm doing at the moment with it. But anyway, getting that mind focused is what we're talking about, and keeping it focused and listening. That's not easy. Coaching can be very hard from the listening standpoint. Any thoughts? Any other comments?
Yeah, I mean, I could tell you my own experiences. Sometimes I get too focused on what next brilliant statement I'm going to make versus hearing what the person's saying. So, you know, that's something that I think simply becoming aware of it helped. But it's something I know I need to continue to work on.
Yeah, you're loading. They're shooting. Yeah. Yeah,
well,
that's very good.
And especially extroverts, and which I consider myself one, and you know, we're always trying to be the center of attention, and I do the same thing. I like the way you put it. You're loading your brilliant statement that you're going to come up with next, and I do that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that kind of gets back to... No, go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say mine's probably not as brilliant as Dan's, but, you know, anyway.
Yeah, you don't know me well enough yet to be making that kind of a statement.
Okay. It's a great breath of freedom to be able to say to yourself, you know, I don't need to prove, you know, how brilliant I am. Number one, I, you know, by the way, I wasn't summa cum laude. I was lucky to get through, you know. But, you know, I feel fortunate that I've gone as far as I have. I mean, for life, it's like the fake it till you make it thing, right? But the reality is, you know, you don't have to be brilliant. People don't really, as they say, and then again, we might have to do a, what I call pithy quotes thing each session, but I always like the one of people don't care what you know until they know that you care. So we don't have to be brilliant people to coach. Obviously being open-minded to what the client is saying, even though it may be something that for some philosophical reason you disagree with, you know, what they are saying, or you're attached to achieving some outcome, then you're controlling the process rather than, you know, helping kind of guide it, right, a little bit. Mm-hmm. Anybody want to have an experience about perhaps being too attached to the outcome of what the coaching activity might have might be? Anybody got a real world experience?
I don't know if it's being attached to the outcome, but I know I have really struggled with one of my coaches who just has such a different value set about treating people than I do. And I have to really work at hearing her values and having her talk about those and talk about, is that value set working for you versus just kind of losing it with, oh my God, how did you get where you are when you treat people like crap? Which is what I'm really wanting to say. And so I don't know, you know, I don't know what place I want her to be. I just know there are times there are real values or philosophical major differences that I really have to work with saying set aside your own, and this time it's about her.
Mm-hmm. Good point. All right. I think that, yeah, and that's a very good one. Again, it's all about not being attached to the outcome. One of the problems that we all have is we want to fix things. Men are worse, by the way, I think, than women, or at least we're accused of that, guys. When somebody brings up something, we want to immediately fix their problem by making recommendations and suggestions. And one of the things that I found very interesting, I'll just share one experience. As a Visage chair, we have a model for what we call issue processing. And issue processing is if somebody has an issue that they want to bring to the group, they state that issue by how do I do whatever, or and what we've trained this group of CEOs to do is not to jump in and make recommendations and tell them what they should do. We force the group to only ask clarifying questions for a certain period of time. And many times after that process takes place, the issue that was put forth in the first place turns out is not the real issue. Are you following me here?
Yes.
Yep. Absolutely.
Yep. And so what happens then, we restate the issue, because many times people will put an issue out there which is they're kind of hiding maybe their part in that issue, so therefore they're not putting that issue out there honestly, or perhaps even if, or at least they're not putting it out there, and they may not realize quite the way they're defining the issue, but when you ask a lot of clarifying questions, then you start honing in on what the real issue might be, and then you ask if, you know, the group, if they might have some suggestions for how to restate the issue, then you've asked the person with the issue what resonates with them. And then you can move into suggestion time a little bit. But that's, again, that's a process within a specific situation. The thing about a coach is not a consultant, and there's a difference, or not a therapist either. And we'll talk more about that as time goes on. But I think we've talked a bit about coaching from the center. The other areas of focus that I mentioned, the four areas we'll get into, are primarily, you know, regarding, you know, understanding the environment that we coach within. In other words, understanding the organization, understanding the organization's goals and processes, and we'll get into that later. And then what tools we have to develop the kind of skills that we're looking for to have as coaches to make us more effective, and then really becoming a resource within your organization as a human capital coach. Next area I'd like to kind of talk about today, which relates back again to the syllabus, is about the co-creative coaching process, and I'd like to ask each one of you what we mean by co-creative coaching. And if you don't have an answer, say I pass, or like, you know, whatever. Don't be afraid to say I don't know, or I didn't read it, or whatever. But if you have a perspective on what co-creative coaching is all about,
this is Dan, and I'll be honest and say I have no idea.
Great. Good. Well, then we're gonna have a takeaway today. Good. All right. Let's see, Jennifer, you might be a leg up on them. So maybe I'll ask you to hold for a second while we check with a couple of the others. Anybody else want to take a crack at that first?
Well, I would be completely guessing, but from the definition, co-creative would be it would be the interaction between the two people or two or more people, the coach and the client or employee, that they would be creating the coaching topics, atmosphere, mechanism, that it would be a duality type of situation. My guess, maybe I'm way
off. You're definitely moving in the right direction. It basically, okay, takes two to tango, as they say.
This is Susie, and I haven't read it, so I'm taking a pass partially, but one of the things I'm curious about with this is, How does this differentiate from having a collaborative relationship versus a co-creative relationship?
Okay. We'll come back and talk about that. Jennifer? Or is that
Jen?
Yeah,
either one is good, whatever you're comfortable with. I think that that's a good question that Susie asks, and I would be interested to know what you think, Bill. But for me, co-creative is when both parties come and they know that they both bring 100%, that it's not one bringing 50% and the other bringing 50% and then carrying any kind of weight from the other at all. And so when you come together in a co-creative, I always say there's no heavy lifting. It's one comes with the understanding that the coach comes with the understanding they're going to ask questions to excavate awareness, and the client comes with the understanding that they're going to be open to building that awareness through answering and searching deeper. So, it's a dance. right, with not one carrying more weight than the other.
Good. I think you're all getting there, and I want to kind of refer back to some of the material, too, on this one, which I will in a minute. But getting back to the question regarding Susie's comment about collaborative versus co-creative, my first reaction was, you know, it's probably just a matter of, words. I mean, in a sense, I think it means kind of the same thing, where both the coach and the client both have responsibility to each other to be participating in certain ways. It's not just the client sitting there and the coaching, you know, and saying, well, okay, I'm going to get coached today. There's a lot of things that the client brings to the party. So I don't know that if there's a definite, you know, the definition of co-creative coaching is both people bringing their creative juices to the party and their different aspects to each other's role. But there's just as much responsibility on the part of the client to participate and to follow through with the recommendations and results of the coaching session as the coach in setting that appropriately. So, you know, if there's a different definition for collaborative coaching, I don't know what it is. Does that make sense? It appears to me to be somewhat the same. Susie, what's your definition of collaborative? Is that the same thing as the two parties both taking responsibility to work together?
This is Susie, and yes, I think it is, but I don't know who said it. I think, the reason this came up was I was working with a group today that's their whole basis is collaborating and partnering, and I had seen the term co-creative, and I just kept running this through my head. And what somebody just said a few minutes ago about it's not bringing different parts to the table, but you're bringing 100%. And I think maybe that's kind of, for me, that was an epiphany, that if we collaborate, you've got A and I've got B, and we get together and make C. And what I'm hearing here is we both have A's and B's, and together we make C's.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. I'm not going to read all the pieces, but at page 19, you mentioned some things about the coach's role, you know, setting the boundaries, letting the client determine the agenda and asking, you know, powerful questions and assist with setting goals and planning and strategizing and you know, get invested in what the client does. And those are just kind of general things. But, you know, what you don't do is try to diagnose or fix them. We talked about that. You don't want to take responsibility for their feelings, decisions, actions, or success. And I'd like to kind of, they say that in here, but I'd like to give an example. Whenever we can bring examples to the party, the better. And that is, when a coach becomes too emotionally involved with a client, then the integrity of the relationship kind of falls apart in many respects. You don't want to get too invested in what they do. In other words, you have to bring your heart, you bring your mind, but you have to have a bit of objectivity in that. A good example was I was at a recent meeting of my some other people that coach, and a person said that this, you know, that this individual that she was coaching was their whole business was falling apart, and this person knew that the client knew that he had a tendency to kind of let things go, and whenever he could get more work in his company, he'd spend a lot of money, and then. And then all of a sudden he'd have to lay a lot of people off, and he had this role for years, and his wife was scared to death because it was their whole retirement in this company and so forth, the small company. And the woman who was coaching, and part of our get-together is a group of vistage chairs, actually. We do it once a month, and we have our own best practices chair as our mentor. She was becoming emotionally involved with the outcome of what's going on here. And the group kind of said, you know, you've got to take a step back. You need to recognize that, you know, if you've, you know, this person's brought this issue forward many times and you've worked through this many times, but they won't take the action to do what they need to do, you know, you can't fret over it and lose sleep over it as the coach. Anybody have a similar kind of thing that's come up for them?
I'll jump in. This is Susie. What was going through my head during this conversation was sort of what are the underlying tenets for me of organization development and looking at a process consulting model versus an expert consulting model. And that is, if I come in truly wearing my OD hat, whether it's coaching or working with a whole organization, I can't be the expert because if I'm the expert, I do, as you say, I take on ownership of whether it's a success or a failure. And if I stay with the process, I enable others to solve their own problem or our own problem.
Good point. And you can be empathetic and sympathetic without being, you know, becoming emotionally choked up yourself, right? I mean, that's something that you have to be as a professional, that thing. It's not about not showing your feelings or not being. Anybody else have a experience where they might have gotten a little too emotionally involved?
This is Dan. Again, not as a coach, but as the client. You know, I've had a coach at one point, and I did, now that we're talking about this, I do think back, and it was a little odd. I would be going through things, this is a couple of years back, as I was working in a new role in the organization at a higher level. It was more of a political climate that I was trying to navigate and work through. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to be allowed to have somebody to work with and somebody that can help me along. And I found that as I was honest and opened up about things that I had going on and how I felt about my boss in particular, I almost felt over the course of time my coach came to dislike my boss and made that very clear to me, which then kind of made me be a little more hesitant about what I said and didn't say. So I felt like it impacted advice and guidance that I was given.
Yeah, that's an easy trap to fall into. In fact, I'm coaching a guy right now who's a sales director in a smaller company, and his boss is a woman who owns the company, the software company. And she asked me to, you know, coach him because, again, you know, it's inside of an organization. The company's paying for it. And so she's looking for me to help him kind of work through his objectives and his goals and improve his effectiveness within, you know, running his piece of the organization. Well, in my coaching process with him, he's been complaining dramatically about her, okay, and why she's inhibiting his ability to get things done. So it puts you in a strange position.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
so
I was going to say, for me, it felt like I now was more careful with what I said and how I said it, because I didn't need that to impact how my conversations with the coach were going to go.
Well, yeah, and I think, again, and I want to kind of summarize or get back and just make one more comment before we get into the talk about the simple coaching model with the, you know, 20 minutes or less we have left. And that is the sponsor within an organization that sponsors you to coach other people. And usually it's a person, you know, a senior person that's brought you in that's in a position of leadership. And so there's a balance there And one of the things that's really important is to really get clear from that leader what outcome they're looking for. You know, because at the same time, you have to develop a confidential relationship with the individual that you're working with, because if they think you're going to be running back to their boss with everything they tell you, then, you know, then the whole thing becomes pretty, you know, it is no longer an authentic situation or a trusting environment. So that's tricky. That can be tricky. You have to kind of tell the leader.
Yeah, this is Jen. I find that to be the most challenging piece about coaching folks within an organization, because you're hired by one and you're serving really the other, or you're serving both. And so will you talk about how to, I don't know, some strategies on how to make that more fluid? And
there's some discussion in our stuff, but from my perspective, because again, I think we need to bring our personal experience in and at least our coaching activities.
Yeah.
You have to make it very clear when the sponsor brings you in, that you need to make it very clear that give me the objective things you'd like to see accomplished, recognizing that I have to develop a confidential relationship with the employee, but only within that relationship will be within the confines of how we can move forward to accomplish the goals of the organization. Mm. So, in other words, it's tricky because if the person bringing you in says, okay, I want feedback on what they think and what they're telling you, I would say I'm not going to be able to provide that. I will provide a summary of our coaching relationship, which is approved by the person that I'm coaching, that they're comfortable in having reported back to you. You know, and so you can get away with it, but you are not going to have a client relationship if they think that you're basically, taking everything right back to the boss. I don't care what the material here says. There's a tendency to be very, you have to go back to the leader and say, look, I'm not coming in. If you ask me to come in as a consultant, that's a different thing. I'm not a consultant, I'm a coach. And coaches are about getting the information that to help your manager achieve the goals that you have laid forward, but they're going to have to come forward with the way they're going to solve that problem, and we'll help guide that. But we're coach, and we're not going to, we can't act as a consultant. Consultants just tell people what to do, and along the same lines, you know, we're not therapists either. If your client has issues where they need therapy and they just use you as a place to, you know, bring all their problems without any kind of solutions, then, you know, they may be, you know, maybe a recommendation that they go see the, as we used to call it, the EAP people, or the employee assistance professionals, which are basically, you know, psychiatrists or psychologists. Okay. Any more thoughts around that? And we'll try to clarify that and get a better handle on that as we go through the next few weeks. Because, as you say, Jennifer, that is probably one of the greatest challenges of being an internal coach inside of, if you're particularly, whether you are an external coach being brought in or somebody that's already in the organization being asked to act in a coaching capacity. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. And all I can give you is my perspective on that. I don't, you know, it's going to depend a lot on the vision and the understanding of the leader. But don't take the job if you think it's going to be sabotage. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yes. Yes, I do. That makes a lot of sense.
It'll be a train wreck. It'll become a train wreck.
Been there. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. So the last thing I'd like to talk about today, if you can go to the ones that have this in front of you, I think it's number 7 in the addendums here. SD7. It's about the simple coaching model. And that's going to be the main thing we're going to be working with for the next many weeks and practice. So I'll just start by looking at obviously there's 4 components to that. And the first one is clarifying the agenda. So I could get some feedback from people on what they think when they think about what needs to be done in the beginning when you first sit down in a coaching session regarding what do you need to do to clarify the agenda? Got some common sense here. What do you think? Pretty good common sense.
Bill, you
sat down with me and said, Bill, how are you today?
Okay.
Yeah. Go ahead. Step 1, clarify and move.
I would say that it is asking the client what they have brought today to speak about and what specific area they are interested in working on, as well as what they most need or want to take away from the session.
Okay. All right, so that makes sense. So you really want to understand what is most important to them that they'd like to discuss, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that they're responsible for bringing that, of course.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is if you're working with somebody on multiple sessions, you might ask them to kind of bring that, write it down or do something before they get there, because many times you start the session off and they're very vague about what they want to talk about, and then you have to kind of like mine it out of them. Mm-hmm. And it's inefficient. I mean, it takes time, and it's just important to really clarify that stuff. Also, you want to reconfirm things like the time. Say, okay, you have an hour for me today, or you have 30 minutes, or whatever that is. Yeah. Make sure that that's the case. And also, in clarifying the agenda, you want to make sure that environmentally, the cell phones are off, they're in a position or a place where they're not going to get disturbed by people knocking on their door or phone calls, all that kind of thing. So I like to make sure you've set the stage properly there. That's really so you need to know what specifically they want to explore, and then, you want to get from them what the details are about that. And then what do they want to take away from the session? That's really an important piece to ask up front. And that to me is like what I call the bookends. The bookends are, what do you want to take away from this session? And at the end of the session, I'd say, did you get the takeaway that you're looking for? So that's bookending the session. Is that clear to everybody?
Yes.
Yeah. It sounds like you are somewhat setting realistic expectations right up front.
Yeah.
With what you can accomplish in the time frame allotted and based on the problem that they bring into the table.
Yeah. And exactly. And because if, you know, if they're asking for something up front that's not going to happen in a half an hour or an hour session, you say, you know, I think you're biting, you're trying to swallow the whole elephant here. I think maybe we better take a slice at a time. So let's see what can we really accomplish in the time we have. So those kind of things. So once you get through with that, so you understand the topic, the details, and again, with those details, you want to ask them, you know, well, what have you done to date about this? That kind of asking what questions are always good. Don't ask why questions. We'll get to that. Really. Why questions put people on the defensive, but what questions are really good, and when questions and how questions. But why questions can be dangerous. Okay, so the next thing then is what we call the four parts. That's number one, and I just really think that number one is so important. It's, if you don't get number one right, the session is not going to produce the fruit that you'd like. Number two. And anybody want to bring an example forward of where they didn't have it clear? Okay. I've had that problem. I've had a couple cases where maybe they mentioned more than one thing, and I kind of didn't really focus on which one of those was the most important to them. I just grabbed one of them, and it was not the one that was most important. So... enough about my mistakes. Number two, seize the coachable moment. Now, Jennifer, I know you teach this, so if I'm off anywhere, just jump in.
No, that's okay. One thing, though, can you tell me where on the accelerator? I'm just looking frantically for it. I can't find it.
It's called SD7.
What's D7?
It's it starts... with SD. SD is that after all the pages in this thing, they have like, I don't know, there's 190 pages.
It's called supporting documents in the back of the binder.
Oh, supporting. Oh, why did they
That's right. Yeah, thank you. Supporting document is what SD is.
It shows up.
It actually starts on
SD5.
Oh, got it. SD. It's at the very end. Okay, thanks, guys. Got it.
Record five. So, seize the coachable moment. What does that mean? What do you guys think that means? Anybody want to take a stab at that? Okay. Okay, Jennifer, you want to give it a whirl?
Oh, it's up to you. If you want to teach it, Bill, that's perfectly fine too.
That's fine. I mean, to me, it's to try to key in on what seems the best path to explore. You know, when you're listening, coachable moments are really when you get kind of an aha. This sounds like an area that we need to ask more questions about, based on the topic, and it's an exploration point. Which seems to make sense, because they'll say something, you'll think, this is something, this is a road I want to go down. This is where I want to drill down and get more detail. Jen, you want to give yours?
Yeah, I find this happens in the first few minutes, and it says that in the material. But there's sometimes things that are not being said, which are an opportunity to seize the coachable moment. Sometimes it's being said, like a throwaway comment, or like someone's repeating something again, or sometimes it's an unrelated topic. You know, someone might be talking about their boss, and the next thing you know, their mother comes in. You know, they're bringing in their mother or something, and you're like, huh, that's weird. It's something like, wait a minute, let me go there. I call them like little rabbit holes, you know, and so we have to listen sort of to what's being said, but also to what's not being said. And also energetically, you can find in someone's breathing, or if they have a tell, or sometimes like people will giggle through something, you know, that's uncomfortable. We have to pick up on those things. And if you're in person, of course, body language can help.
Yeah. Right. I guess I would imagine that a lot of that comes with time and trial and error. But it sounds like, you know, just almost, if you call it critical listening, if it's just being aware, if it's looking beyond the words that are being said, finding those little, you call it rabbit holes, Jennifer, and it sounds like once you find one, it's kind of jumping right in and exploring that even further.
Yep.
I think that's a good point. I think that they're kind of supplying little clues maybe about where to go and how to coach them best. It's you're right. They may bring something else into what that topic is about, and you realize that their problem may be different. Maybe like you said, you know, if they bring their mother in, they had a problem is the relationship with the mother, as opposed to, you know, what they might have concretely said, you know, that's somewhat related but not quite on the mark. Mm-hmm. And you got to be a little careful there because, again, we're not therapists. So.
Right. But it just might give you some insight, like if they did bring the mother in, like, oh, well, maybe like it's not something internal, like professional. Maybe they have something going on in their outside world. So it might say, you know, you might just say, huh, that's interesting. We were just talking about your team or your staff, and then you mentioned something about your mother. What's that about? So it could be as simple as, you know, opening it up for them to be aware.
Yeah, that's great. And I realize that because we're having such fun, our time is running out. So I'll just mention the other two, go back and take a look at it. And then there's that's supporting documents 5 through 7. But there's also here you'll find that there's an example where you can actually go through and see a kind of conversation in here. And how this model, you know, how a client and a coach go through it. And fighting the shift is number 3. Basically, when you're going, after you kind of explored one of these coachable moments, then you'll find there may be something the client says which is kind of they have a new thought or a renewed sense of motivation or direction. And some options may have opened up to them. So you acknowledge that, and you acknowledge them, or you invite them to acknowledge that, encourage them to use that, maybe ask questions regarding this new understanding. Anything else you want to add to that? We'll go a lot deeper in this when we practice it. Okay. Again, like to end on time. Frame the masterpiece is the 4th component of the simple coaching model. I like to call it the subtle coaching model. I know it's called the simple coaching model. Endorse the client for new perspectives, ideas, and so forth. And at that point, I like to help them. And I ask, like to say, well, what of these different things we've talked about here resonate with you the most? And if they say, well, I think that maybe I ought to have that conversation with somebody and confront that person regarding, you know, this issue, then I'd say, well, when would you like to do that? And they said, well, I'll do it in 3 months. No, I think maybe we ought to do a little quicker than that, I think. You know, don't you? Okay. How about by Thursday? Okay, by Thursday. And so you set up kind of an accountability thing there. So you say, great, I'll be happy next time we get together to hear about how it went. So, you know, help them develop their next steps and then throw in the accountability piece. And at this point, and I'm kind of rushing through this, is then you get step back from the whole session and say, you know, did you get the takeaway from our discussion that we talked about when we started? Kind of ran through that one. Anybody have any closing thoughts? Let me ask you this. Today's session, did you get some takeaways from the session?
Oh, this is Dan. I absolutely did. I mean, I think
this whole class is going to be full of takeaways for me. So, yeah, it was great to connect with everybody and learn about each other, and then it was great to start diving into the material.
Yeah, this has been great. I love. This is a great group, and going over this material is going to be a lot of fun. Thank you, and I love hearing your experiences also, Dan. So, Bill. So please share.
Yeah, you guys share back because, every week we're going to check in. When I say check in, I'm going to say, check in personally and professionally. Mm-hmm. We'll take a few minutes to do that because, the group is a very supportive thing for each of us. Well, listen, I'm going to close it off. It's a little bit after the hour and a half, so I thank you and look forward to next week.
Thanks, everyone.
Great. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.